Canto 4, chapter 28, Puranjana becomes a woman in the next life, text 16. Duhitriputra Pautranscha. Jami Jama Triparshadam. Jami Jama Triparshadam. Swatva Vashishtam Yat Kinchit. Swatva Vashishtam Yat Kinchit. Griha Kosha Parichadam. Grihakosha Parichadam. Duhitriputra Pautranscha. Jami Jama Triparshadam. Swatva Vashishtam Yat Kinchit. Grihakosha Parichadam. Duhitriputra Pautranscha. Jami Jama Triparshadam. Swatva Vashishtam Yat Kinchit. Griha Kosha Parichadam. Duhitriputra Pautranscha. Jami Jama Triparshadam. Swatva Vashishtam Yat Kinchit. Griha Kosha Parichadam. Duhitriputra Pautranscha. Jami Jama Triparshadam. Swatva Vashishtam Yat Kinchit. Griha Kosha Parichadam. Matajis?
Duhitriputra Pautranscha.
Jami Jama Triparshadam. Swatva Vashishtam Yat Kinchit. Griha Kosha Parichadam. Duhitriputra Pautranscha. Jami Jama Triparshadam. Svatva Vashishtam Yat Kinchit. Griha Kosham Parichadam. Word for word. Duhitri. Daughters. Putram. Sons. Pautran. Grandsons. Cha. And. Jami. Daughters-in-law. Jamatri. Sons-in-law. Parshadan. Associates. Swatva. Property. Avashishtan. Remaining. Yat Kinchit. Whatever. Griham. Home. Kosha. Accumulation of wealth. Parichadam. Household paraphernalia. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. King Puranjana then began to think of his daughters, sons, grandsons, daughters-in-law, sons-in-law, servants, and other associates, as well as his house, his household paraphernalia, and his little accumulation of wealth. Please repeat. King Puranjana then began to think of his daughters, sons, grandsons, daughters-in-law, sons-in-law, servants, and other associates, as well as his house, his household paraphernalia, and his little accumulation of wealth. Purport. It's not infrequent for a person overly attached to the material body to request a physician to prolong his life at least for some time. If the so-called scientific physician is able to prolong one's life a few minutes through the use of oxygen and other medicines, he thinks that he is very successful in his attempts, although ultimately the patient will die. This is called the struggle for existence. At the time of death, both patient and physician still think of prolonging life. Although all the constituents of the body are practically dead and gone, Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Ishvaram. Death can be the greatest victory, the greatest success, and the culmination of a lifetime, or death can be the utter defeat, failure in life. Here we see the attempt of holding on to family, to wealth, to properties, to all the material things that have to be left behind. But King Puranjana, in the last moment, he's attached to all these things. He's thinking of them, he's meditating on them, he cannot let go. So basically he's being defeated by time. He's being defeated by death. And he's probably thinking that now my life is a failure. Everything I try to do now is useless. Whatever wealth I accumulated, I have to leave it behind. My family members that I love so much, I have to be separated from them. So, in other words, all my attempts to control, all my attempts to enjoy, all my attempts to think that I am the Lord of everything, it's finished. And even though I would like to live forever, I am forced out of this body. So, utterly defeated. That's the situation at the time of death for a person who has no spiritual cultivation, spiritual advancement. Basically, it's a hopeless condition, it's a desperate situation in which the person has no shelter, has no perspective of any happiness, everything is going to be finished. On the other side, if a devotee, he has cultivated his Krishna consciousness, he has cultivated a relationship with Krishna, and he knows that there is something higher expecting him. He knows that his service will continue. Whatever service he has been rendering in this world will continue in another dimension. So that person has a great hope, and he has even the curiosity to see what's expecting me in the future. Like Narada Muni, in the end of his life, you know, in the Bhagavatam is mentioned how Kala Pratiksham Vimado Vimatsaraha. He was completely free from all envy, from all material attachment, and he was even eager, looking forward to see what is expecting for him. So that's the situation of a devotee. And then when death actually came, it was compared to a lightning in which the thunder, the sound and the illumination all occur simultaneously. So he left that gross body and he assumed a spiritual body to serve Krishna in that way. So that's a very drastic distinction between dying in the material conception of life and dying with a spiritual understanding. So this process of dying, it's something very interesting in one way, because it can vary so much from one culture to another culture. For example, in the West, on one extreme, we have the culture or the approach. The way they approach death is like the ostrich. Huh? Just try to hide your face and not look at death, not think about it, not discuss. Don't try to think, because if you think, there's no solution, there is no way out, and there's no hope beyond death. That's the end, is the defeat. So, as much as you can cover up, as much as you can avoid thinking about it, well, just enjoy life as much as you can, and when it comes, you cry. And everybody around you cry together. So that's one approach. And another approach is the opposite, other extreme. You expose death as much as you can, so that you become disgusted with material life, and you become even scared of material life, or detached. So that's also, we also see that, especially in Buddhist countries, in the Buddhist culture, in which there is awareness of the temporary nature of the material body, and there is a sense of detachment from material life, but not very clear concept of life after death. It's just a vague idea that somehow consciousness will continue and it may reincarnate, it may come back in a different body, or it may achieve liberation. So a few days ago we were watching a documentary on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It's a very interesting documentary showing the Buddhist culture in Tibet and other Buddhist countries, in which they have a book to be read for the dying men, especially after they die, because they understand that the moment you stop breathing is not completely death, but the soul is gradually becoming detached from the body. So it may take, according to them, 49 days, in which gradually one is becoming detached from the eyesight, from the hearing, from hearing, from all the different senses. And then, at the end of this process, one may become fully detached and become liberated, or one may become attached to the material body and incarnate in other species of life, human, animals, etc. So what the priest does, for 49 days they read this book, and they basically are preaching to the soul who left the body that you should not be attached to this material body. It's finished. Now it's going to be decomposed and you should let it go. You should proceed your journey. Don't be attached to it. And they preach like that. No? If you become attached, then you're doomed. If you go towards the light, then you can achieve liberation. And like that, they will go on and on preaching for 49 days. And imagine, the dead body is there laying on the bed. And the priest is sitting in front of the dead body and reading. So it's a very scary, very shocking sight. And the family is there waiting for basically 2 months, no? For the whole process. And then they choose the date for the cremation, and they have the cremation done. And so basically for 2 months they are stuck in that process. So it's quite difficult to apply. And also they have different ways. I would say that they're quite creative in their way to deal with the dead body. So because some countries like Tibet and other northern parts of Himalayan areas, they don't have much wood So Mongolia also, so to be cremated is actually a luxury. Not everybody can afford to get wood and be cremated. So they have other ways to dispose the body. So one way is to take to the top of the mountain and cut the body to pieces and feed to the birds, so that the soul can be taken upwards by the birds. So that's one way. No, but it's very scary also, because for the son or for the priest or for whoever is doing that, he has to crush the bones to pieces and cut the flesh to pieces, in small pieces, and then mix with flour so that the birds will come and take it and carry it away. So it's cheaper than burning, because you don't have to buy the wood. Just a little bit of flour to spread on top and attract the birds. So another way is to just dispose on a river or a lake. Or another way is to mummify. Mummy, no? Like you put oils and different things and salt and you preserve the body. That can be done especially for lamas or especially advanced souls. Or also sometimes they do for the sake of spiritual education. So my friend went to Thailand and he was describing how in a Buddhist temple there he saw one glass box, like a glass coffin, with a dead body inside, mummified dead body, preserved, and it was a woman's body. And on the top they had a nice picture of a beautiful young woman. And then they have it written, "This beautiful young woman lies inside." So you look inside and there's a mummified dead body. So that's inside the temple, so that the monks, they can meditate every day. This is my material body. This is my destiny. The destiny of this temporary body. So it's a very extreme way to expose death and to become aware of the temporary nature of material life. So anyway, so just a few days ago, we had in Mayapur another kind of death experience of a devotee, a Prabhupada disciple, who left his body in Mayapur Dham. So I would like to describe a little bit of death and so that we can try to appreciate and understand more our own culture, the Vedic culture, how to deal with the end of life or the end of this material body. So Krishna Kishore Prabhu, he's from Argentina, but he lived in Brazil most of his life, did a lot of preaching there. He was a very learned devotee, very scholarly and very expert, especially in Ayurveda. And still Krishna took him quite early. He got cancer and he tried to do some treatments there, and he saw it's getting more and more difficult. The hope is becoming less and less that we can be cured. So he came to Mayapur. So his wife also came, two small children. And anyway, she was trying to cure her husband until the end, through Ayurveda, through different things. She's doing everything she can. And she's saying, as long as there is hope, we should try our best. Because we cannot create life, we should preserve life as much as we can. So that's a normal, natural instinct. It's a natural feeling that all human beings, they have, that we should not waste life. Life is very sacred. We should try to save it. So as long as the hope was there, she's trying all different things. So in the West also, we see, is a natural thing. Everybody will do that. The difference is that there is a point in which you see, okay, there is no way, there is no point of, there is no return. You cannot do anything to avoid that anymore. So now you have two options. One is just the struggle for existence that Prabhupada mentioned in the purport. You may keep struggling, even to prolong life for 1 minute by artificial means, by medical equipments, by whatever. So it's a kind of over endeavor, because there's no way back. So what's the point of doing that? So even I heard a case in which the person was very religious, and he was surrounded by his family, and he told the family, "I don't want to be taken to the hospital. I want to die at home. I want all of you to pray and to sit around me and pray as I leave my body. Please don't take me to the hospital." But then the last moment, the sons, they decide, no, let's take him to the hospital. So they took the father to the hospital, and they put so many pipes and everything. And then nobody was there praying, nobody was there. The environment was not what he wanted. And he died like that, unconscious, full of pipes inside his veins, oxygen mask in his face, and could not pray, nobody was there around him the way he wanted. But then we have the example now. Krishna Kishore Prabhu, he was very sober until the end of his life. I went to visit him a few times, and I was surprised to see that he's fully Krishna conscious. And whoever comes to speak to him, he's only speaking about Krishna. And he's recording books. He recorded one full book, and he was on the second book. I don't know whether he finished the second or not, but he was recording books. And the topics were very interesting. And now there is no devotee who is going to transcribe the books and translate from Spanish to Portuguese. So he was like that. And one devotee came while I was there, and he was asking Prabhu, "So what are you doing? How's your disease? And how's the situation?" He said, No. I'm tired of discussing my medical situation. No, let's speak about Krishna. There's no point of discussing my health condition." So he was very sober, very Krishna conscious, and the devotees were visiting him. And in the last day, the previous day he was fine, no? And then the last day, the wife said he was having a hard time to breathe. So she asked the devotees, "Please bring Mahagalan, Mahaprasad, Charanamrita," and the devotees are bringing. And then at one point she saw that he's having a hard time to breathe, it's very getting worse and worse. So they tried also to put oxygen, but it's not helping. So then she turned him to the side to see if it helps, and also to if he has to leave the body, that position she was explaining, it makes it easier for the soul to leave the body from the upper part of the body, not from the lower side of the body. So anyway, but she's there with him, and all the devotees are there chanting, and the holy name is resounding in the room. So then she's giving him Charanamrita in the mouth, drop by drop. At one point she realized, okay, he's going to leave very soon. So she remembered, okay, before he was sitting with all the pictures of Krishna, Nrisimhadeva, Chaitanya, Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada in front of him, but now she turned him to the side. So he's facing the wall and nothing is there. So she quickly went and brought Lord Chaitanya. And then she went and brought Lord Nrisimhadeva. And then she went and brought Srila Prabhupada. And she made some mistake. I think she put maybe Prabhupada on top of the Lord. I don't know. And then with his eyes, he indicated, no, you change. You put Nrisimhadeva on top. You put Lord Chaitanya there. You put Prabhupada down. So until the end, he's aware of what's going on. Even though he cannot speak, but he's fully Krishna conscious, fully aware. And he was teaching his wife, no, you put in the proper place. So then she saw that he's fixing his eyes there to the pictures of Nrisimhadeva, Lord Chaitanya, and Prabhupada. And by chance, she grabbed the first picture that she saw, but Prabhupada is just like that, like, come. And then she hid herself under the bed, like she didn't want to be on the path of his eyes anymore. She just went down so that he wouldn't fix his mind or his eyes on her. And then looking at the pictures of Krishna, he left. No, with all the devotees chanting and in a full Krishna conscious way. So after that we had, it was already getting dark, it was 5 o'clock in the evening, so it would be too difficult to have the cremation immediately, because until everything would get ready, it would be dark and wouldn't be auspicious. Even though some devotees suggested, but anyway, Mayapur Dham, everything is auspicious. But his wife said, no, we should do everything in the best way for his benefit, for his spiritual benefit. So let's have kirtan all night, and tomorrow morning, as soon as the sun rises, we will have the cremation. So throughout the night we had kirtan in the room, and it's amazing how the atmosphere was very spiritual, very light, very inspiring. It was not like a sad mood or suffering or desperate or no. It was a very light mood, and everybody chanting very heartfeltly. And then the next morning we had a procession around the samadhi, the temple, and cremation with kirtan. So, and throughout the whole thing, no, we have so many children and women and all the devotees, and devotees from South America who knew him, devotees from all other countries that never met him, all kinds of devotees are there, and nobody is like depressed. Even the children are there, they're not scared to see a dead body. They are very happily chanting the holy name, peacefully, and the whole experience was spiritually uplifting. That was my feeling, from the beginning to the end. Throughout the sickness and the dying moment, and then the night and the next morning until cremation. And his son was there. His son was very brave. Now his small son, 10 years old, I think, he went and he put the fire around the pyre. And he did all the rituals that he was supposed to do in the end. And he came with 7 jars of water to switch off the fire and then put the ashes inside Ganga. Small boy, but so brave and so sovereign, and was very impressive to see. And his wife was also very clear-minded and sober, and doing everything in the best possible way, thinking, let me do the best service to my husband. Now that he left, I want to do everything the best possible way. And while we are dressing and cleaning the body and applying tilaka, I was there with another devotee and his wife. No? So the wife was saying that she was very grateful for her husband, but she was feeling, I didn't lose a husband only, I lost my guru. Until the end, he was teaching me. So he mentioned the incident with the eyes, he was indicating, no? You put the Lord up, and you put Prabhupada underneath. No? And she felt, my whole life, no? He has been a guru for me, and I'm losing my guru. So, anyway, so the next day I went again to see how she was and speak to her, and she was expressing so much gratitude to the devotees who helped, and she was expressed so much gratitude to her husband, and she was saying, I am very confident that everything was done in the best possible way, and he was exemplary as a devotee, his life was fully successful, and his passing away was exemplary. So she was not depressed even the next day, because I thought maybe that day she was very busy, but maybe the next day she'll be depressed, so let me go there to see. And she was so like Krishna conscious. And she said, I want to meet all of you, all the devotees who helped, and I want to express my gratitude. No, and now she's thinking what she's going to do now in her devotional service. Her husband wanted to have an Ayurvedic clinic in Mayapur. That was one of his dreams, but he never managed. He has an Ayurvedic clinic in Nova Gokula Dam in Brazil. They had the plan of having a branch in Mayapur. So she said, no, maybe that's something for me to do, to continue to stay in Mayapur and to treat the devotees and to offer Ayurvedic service. Or maybe I teach in the school, I don't know. She's no, now she has to see what's the next step in life. But it was a very spiritually uplifting experience for the husband who left, for her, for the children, for the devotees who were around, for everybody. So my realization, the whole thing, was that the Vedic culture, the culture that Prabhupada gave to us, is something that in whatever situation of life we find ourselves, it is highly uplifting. If we have a very happy situation, let's say we have Gaura Purnima festival, and we have Mahakirtan Mela, and we have Prasadam, and we have Parikrama, great! We're making spiritual advancement in a very happy situation. And if we have a very extreme, difficult situation, like the death of a dear person, or even our own death, still, or even in that situation, the Vedic culture gives us the best use of that situation, in which we can learn, we can grow spiritually, and we can actually get the highest benefit. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he sings, Seva Sukha Dukhe Parama Sampada Nashaya Avidya Dukha, that in devotional service, happiness or misery, they're both the same, in the sense that they destroy the root cause of misery, which is ignorance. So devotional life, devotional service is all auspicious. And Vedic culture makes everything auspicious, even the most difficult situation. So in one sense, it's natural, the feeling of trying to avoid death, because this just is a very clear indication that the soul is eternal. The soul cannot accept death, because death is unnatural and alien to the soul. Actually, the soul doesn't meet with death at any stage. The soul is eternal, unborn. So, but how are we going to deal with that? That sentiment, that feeling we have of being eternal. No, if you just try to feel eternal in this body, it's useless. If you try to just deny death, if you try to hide death or to cover it up, we don't make any spiritual advancement, we don't get any benefit. We just become desperate, and in the end we become defeated by death. If you just expose it and become detached from material life without having a positive way and a positive perspective of spiritual life, then it's also not very... you get some benefit, but it's not the highest. But if you can approach that with detachment from the material body and attachment to Krishna, and a perspective that I can go beyond this miserable world, temporary life, and I can achieve eternal spiritual life in devotional service, in loving relationship with Krishna, then it's all auspicious for everybody. So that's the what Prabhupada gave us. That's the Vedic understanding, the Vedic culture, and the Krishna conscious approach to the end of this material body. And it's the best way to accept death. Because actually everybody, when facing death, has to go through stages of acceptance. No, it's in the West, the psychology of death is discussed by many philosophers, psychologists. They discuss the stages of accepting death. In the beginning, the person doesn't want to accept. There's a tendency of denying. No, it's not possible. It cannot happen. The doctor must be wrong. No? And then the second stage is anger. Why it has to happen to me? It's not fair. It's not fair. And the person gets angry. Angry at others. And he tries to blame the family members, try to blame the doctors, try to blame even God. Why it has to happen to me? It's not fair. What did I do wrong? Why should I die? So that's the second stage. Then there is a third stage, which is bargaining. The person will bargain with the doctors, with the family. No, let's somehow try to find a way. No, I'll pay you any amount of money, I'll give you any money that you want, but you please extend my life, even for a few months. Or the person may come to the stage of bargaining with God. I promise I'll be a good person from now on, I'll do this and that, I'll do so many promises, if you can just extend my life a little bit. And the person may promise to God so many things. So that's the third stage of bargaining. Then, when the person sees, actually I'm going to die, then the next stage is depression. The person becomes very, very sad, and everything becomes meaningless. No? My family, my wealth, my house, my knowledge, whatever I have, it's all useless. And finally comes the stage of acceptance. Okay, I'm ready to go. I understand I have to die, and I accept it. So the point is that these different stages, they not necessarily happen to everyone. A person may get stuck in the stage of denying, and he may die denying. He may try to just deny that he's dying and take all kinds of drugs to minimize the pain and even to become unconscious. So both the person dying and the family members, they may try, okay, let's make it easier. Give him a lot of injections and medicines and drugs to make him fully dull, and he can die without consciousness. So just deny death. That's one way. And a person may die in that stage. Or the person may die angry. Angry at God. Angry at the family members. Angry at the doctor. It's another way of dying. Or they may die bargaining. Or may die depressed. But the best way to die is when you can accept. You accept, okay, my time has come. I'm ready to go. I'm even curious to know what's expecting me. So that's the best way to go. But it's very difficult to come to that stage if you don't have faith in God, if you don't have the perspective of a future life in a spiritual world. So spiritual life is extremely important. The spiritual cultivation is extremely important, especially at the time of death. Now, like the Bengali proverb says, whatever sadhana, whatever bhajan you do throughout life will be tested at the time of death. So anyway, it's something for us to be aware and to be prepared for. Life is a great lesson, is a great school. We can learn so many things, but ultimately we should prepare ourselves for eternal life. We should prepare ourselves to go beyond this material body, this material world, by cultivating our relationship with Krishna and taking full shelter of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, cultivating a very good relationship with the Vaishnavas, because these are the people who will be around us chanting Hare Krishna in the end of our body. And also these are the people who are going to be with us beyond this life in the spiritual world. So we should be very careful in cultivating good relationship with the devotees. Okay, so I'll stop here. If anyone has questions or comments or realizations on these topics, please share with us. Yes, Prabhu.
Mentioned in Tibet, they cut the body into pieces. They don't have a land to bury the body.
Sorry?
There's no land in the country
to bury the body. I think burying is also one option. They have so many ways. They're quite creative. I think there are 5 ways. This sky funeral, you just put in the top of the mountain for the birds, burying, cremation, water, and mummification. 5 ways, if I remember correctly.
So why suffering the priest to cut the body? Why not just bury the body?
I'm not an expert, but my feeling, what I understand, is that they try to actually expose death. They don't try to hide it, to cover it up. They try to actually show, so everybody is very aware of death. So that way they don't keep the illusion that life will go on forever. So even in that documentary I mentioned, many people were interviewed in the street and asked, so are you scared of dying? Are you afraid? And people say, no, I have seen that so many times, I know it's going to happen to me. No, so they have that thing, they don't try to cover it up. So burying, you put down and nobody sees, there is no much awareness. But when you expose like that, then everybody sees. No, if you put a mummy in a temple room with a picture of the beautiful woman, it's a very heavy...
Okay, you talk about the dead body in a Buddhist monk temple in Thailand.
Yeah.
And in the Gita, it said, whatever you remember the point of death, that, there you go. So if the monk are meditating on a dead body and they leave their body, where do they go? They don't go to God.
It's very scary. I wouldn't recommend anybody to meditate on that.
I'm saying
in the moment of dying. So that's the thing. From one side, there is a knowledge about the temporary nature of material life and a sense of detachment. That's a good thing. But what lacks is a positive understanding of life beyond death, of spiritual life, and of that understanding that whatever you meditate upon, you become like that. So that's what Prabhupada gave us. That's what Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita. So we should be actually very appreciative of these things. Take full advantage and also help other people to understand. Because in the West, people don't know how to live and they don't know how to die. So Krishna consciousness, I would say, is the art of living and dying in the material sense. And then beyond this life in this world and the death of the material body, eternal life. So it's actually an art. Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam is the art of living, the art of acting this world and going beyond this world for eternal life.
Yeah? As a devotee, are we going to be Krishna conscious or to be death conscious? What do we meditate on?
You should be conscious of eternal life in the spiritual world. So, and if you have that, if our consciousness is fixed on that, then we're not scared and like Narada Muni, death will come just as a lightning. Okay, this body is over and now you go on for your spiritual life. Or like Dhruva Maharaj, death comes just as a stepping stone for him to climb on the Vimana and go back to the spiritual world. So that should be our approach. We should not be fixed on dying. We should be fixed on eternal life. Death will be just a lightning if you have that consciousness. Yeah. So I show two extremes, and as I understand, Krishna consciousness is a balanced way to don't be attached to material life, to the illusion of material life, don't be over focused on death, but be actually detached in a positive way because you have a higher taste and you have a higher perspective and expectations of life. So it's actually a dynamic balance of both.
I was thinking that a devotee should not really care about death, only Krishna. Because you may go on the way, a car will knock you down, you die, you're not even prepared. So if a devotee is thinking so much about death, the body is not eternal, and he leaves the body, he's coming back again. But if a devotee is Krishna conscious, anytime death can come.
Yes.
Maybe in the flight, you may be in the Ganga, but it just take you away. So where do you go? To the best is just to be Krishna conscious.
Yes, for a devotee, doesn't matter. Jivava, Marava, the same. Like the story of the prince, no? For the prince, oh, better you live forever. For the who are the different people? The butcher, better don't live, don't die. For the devotee, no, for the tapasvi, better you die now. Your life is miserable, but you die now and you have a great future. But for the devotee, jivava marava, doesn't matter. You live or you die, doesn't matter. So the focus is not on either. The devotee is not attached to this world, is not afraid of dying, because whatever situation, now he's serving Krishna. After death, he'll be serving Krishna. Only the address may change. Everything else is the same. His identity remains the same. Only the address will change.
I have one question. When a devotee is leaving the body, and they try to preserve the body to make him live with medication, oxygen, whatever, is it not a sort of attachment to the body that when a devotee goes on the way, just die off?
So we need a balance. One extreme is you try everything to the extent that the person cannot even be Krishna conscious because you're putting so many pipes and so many oxygen and this and that, that you cannot think about Krishna, can only think about somehow trying to save the body. So that's one extreme. It becomes foolish. Other extreme is you don't value life and you try to get rid of the body as soon as possible without trying to preserve. That means you don't understand that this body is not mine, is not yours, not belongs to Krishna. So Krishna is the one who has to decide when is the time. So I cannot try to cut short. I have to wait for the right time, whenever Krishna thinks is the right time to go. So the devotees, he may try, because Krishna Kishore Prabhu himself, a few days before leaving, he told Guru Sevananda, I'm not sure. I don't know if Krishna, because he was an Ayurvedic doctor, maybe Krishna wants me to survive this so that I can cure other people, I can learn how to deal with cancer, and I can help other devotees. And if Krishna does that, I really want to focus and do my Ayurvedic clinic here in Mayapur, and I want to help other devotees in the same condition. Or Krishna may want me to go. If Krishna wants me to go, then when he gives me the sign, I'm ready to go. So, but I don't know. So at that point, he didn't know what Krishna wants. But at one point when he felt, okay, that's it, then he's not trying to hold on. He's focused on Krishna, and his wife also accepted. So from both sides, there was acceptance. Sometimes the person accepts, but the family does not accept. So it's a balance. We have to actually live in Krishna's hands. That's a devotee's attitude. Okay? So thank you very much. Grantaraj, Mad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Itai Gora Premanande Hari Hari Go.